Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin, luxurious locks, as he strokes his hair in front of us. Oh, man, I'd be doing that, too, if I had a funded Kickstarter campaign like ActionNewsGame.com.
Yeah, man. Thank you. You can go ahead and check it out, ActionNewsGame.com. We are funded, but we got a million miles to go to make the game as amazing as we want it to. So go ahead and check that out. Our next stretch goal is at 750 backers. So tell your friends.
Yeah, it's just the start. It's of course they're going to get the first part funded, but it's really the long game, folks, the long game. And it's a wonderful, fun game. And if you want to stay on the right side of weird things, not have goblins infest your house, just saying, possibly. Or if you do, we'll give you the choice. That ha you heard is none other than Brian Brushwood.
Heck yeah, man. I'm just obsessed with the idea of starting to call Justin Robert Young Luxy Locks from now on. I think that just has a ring to it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I normally don't have the long hair. I've been keeping it short for a while now, but I had to grow it out for the Kickstarter video, but it's starting to literally and figuratively grow
this
on me.
This might be the only moment that I have to do this. Now that you have that luxurious salt and pepper, long gray and black locks, and you have that mustache, is there a chance we could... This might be the single best moment in your life that we could get your impression of the Albert Einstein smiling poster.
Oh, is he sticking out
his tongue?
It does
look like a young Einstein. Oh, my gosh.
It's pretty good.
Good job.
Oh. No way that photo will get abused.
Man, that's good science, people.
Hey, you know what it is today? It's weird creature washing ashore, showing up in your backyard Monday.
Oh, my goodness. I heard some chit-chat, kind of like going to homeroom at third period. I just heard some chit-chat, and I don't remember what it was, but everything you're saying is ringing bells. I think I heard some stuff washing ashore.
Well, there's washshore, but let's start with backyards.
Right.
I'm going to show you something. What is this strange animal headline? Man captures unique creature tearing up his grass. Before we get to the explanation, I want to show the photo of this. And I didn't even send it to Bryce because I know that he'll probably find it faster than I can email him. So the headline, this man was trapped. A strange animal is tearing up his grass and now wants some help identifying and finding the creature a new home. I don't know what it is. He says, and then he goes on to say, we're going to take a look at this thing. I will tell you this. It's adorable.
It looks somewhere between a possum and a fox. Is that a weird thing to say?
I thought this is weird things, Brian.
Well, I mean, it's got a possum-like stocky body, but I can't tell if it's a marsupial or a mammal. The face is distinctly fox-like, though, and it appears as though does it have a ringed tail, or is that only in the picture-in-picture inset there?
Only the picture-in-picture inset.
Yeah, I think that's just the inset.
So wait.
So there's a video of it on Q13 Fox, and if you go to that link, you can see this thing, and it's adorable.
So it does have that kind of possum sort of look to it, but I guess the possum has the hairless face, right? Look, I don't know. I'm not up on my possums.
Man, I'm looking at this. Okay, if you freeze it, this is a perfect this is the old lady young woman Rorschach test, where it's like, if you squint, it's a fox. If you squint, it's a possum. If you squint, it's clearly a dog. No matter what, it looks annoyed.
Yeah, no, it looks like the sexiest possum ever. Like, this would be the movie star of possums.
He's chill as hell, too. If I squint, it's a possum in a cage. If I relax, it's a dog fox in a kennel with his best friend.
Well, gentlemen, your animal expertise is interesting and unconventional and unorthodox. We have not definitively identified what it is, but I would say for some people, you look at it and you go, I had a different take at it.
Dude.
And
can I just tell you, if it was in my house, my Father's Day present right here, I could finally use to mess with them. My kids gave me a DNA dog testing kit so we could find out what breed Kepler is. And I kind of love the idea of sending them something that's not even dog DNA and just seeing what they come back with.
Right. It's rec. It's got to be a raccoon. That's my take. It's got to be a raccoon.
Like an albino raccoon.
Yeah. If you go back and look, like, at first, like, the face certainly has, like, fox-like features. But I had a fun experience once, and that was I was in Bozeman, Montana at this ranch, spending some time up there. It was great, a really neat group of people there. And I got to go over to what was this old trash heap from like 30 years before, 40 years before, And it was with Jack Horner, the bone expert, you know, the dinosaur expert. And I found this old sort of bone sitting there. And I'm like, oh, what's this from? And Jack just started doing this whole Socratic method with me, like asking me questions like, well, what does this look like? What about the shape of this? What do you think would be here and all that, you know? And it was a very interesting experience. And you start to look at like, oh, what's really important? What are the first things you sort of look for? Because some morphologies, you know, are highly adaptive. Other ones take a lot of time to change teeth, for example. You know, possum has those little sharp, kind of like little needle-like sort of teeth. Legs, limbs, things like that. You look at a fox is going to have more, you know, of a, you know, what would look like canine, although canines, certainly we've got different features there. So this looks to me like a raccoon.
Wow. Yeah. You know, now that I look at a raccoon, it really is just like an albino version of a raccoon.
Yeah.
Like how much you identify a raccoon by its coloration.
In your mind, or in my mind, I'm just painting a skin of what I traditionally think of as a raccoon, and it matches perfectly. That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's neat. But it's, you change that one element mm-hmm. to it. Actually, you know, and I told you years ago on the show, I talked about them. You know, I've had a couple my chupacabra sightings where I've encountered things that I know people would have mistaken for that. One was a raccoon with mange, and you take the fur off those things. Oh boy, it's a scary.
Oh my god,
creature.
No! Just Google albino raccoon. Like, nailed it. Like this is it's a little skinnier than some of the raccoons otherwise, but yeah, you would that totally makes sense.
Well, in this report from WREG says WREG investigated and we believe it's a young albino raccoon. Albino raccoons are not very common,
dude,
and struggle to survive in the wild because their light coats prevent them from camouflaging.
I did not even think about the age aspect because, of course, all critters look different as young adolescents than at full adulthood. And I could see him being young and younger and lithe, more cat-like or whatever would make him all the more mysterious.
Yep.
That's pretty good. That's
a good one. This is like way wholesome for the Weird Things show. Like we started off, we solved the mystery. Nobody died. Like there's no imperiling of Brian's children. This is an unexpected return to innocence.
Let's see how long that lasts. We've got some other kind of cool news. There are two new species of creatures are found on Sulawesi. And this is, a tiny little island in the middle of around Indonesia. A lot of really cool stuff there. And the nickname for this one is, headline is, Tiny New Forest Goblins Discovered Look Like Yoda. And perhaps the best National Geographic headline ever written.
What the
Now, it looks like a tarsier to me, you know, but I guess there's many different kind of species of them. But when you see this thing, you're like, oh, cool. But I love the idea that they called it a forest goblin.
Oh, my God.
It does look like a brown guy. Yoda with big eyes.
Mm-hmm. Come to my jungle, you will.
I mean, so here's the weird part. Like nowadays, we live in an age where anybody can whip out their phone and take a picture of anything. I keep going back to the 1800s when man is by and large enlightened, but also living in, you know, the jungle slash forest or whatever. And the best way we have to communicate stories is not digital photographs that are exactly replicated with checksum redundancy and so on, but instead stories. Like, of course, everybody believed in will-o'-wisps and goblins and all that stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah. So let's go. We got another We had a monkey invasion. Apparently, in Florida's been having an increase in the monkey population, and a man's reporting that, like, some property they have, they've upped infestation of like 20 or 30 monkeys, which has been encroaching there. But the most terrifying encroaching story of the day, and again, this is also from National Geographic. The headline was, camp counselor wakes up with his hand inside bear's mouth.
It sounded like you said hand.
Yeah, which is another word for hand. So let me pull this up.
Because the version of that that I read was it was his head.
And the Washington Post also says discovers his head is inside bear's
mouth. Sorry, head.
Waking up to a crunching noise, and the crunching noise is his head inside of a bear. Slightly bigger, bigger story, Andrew. Slightly bigger.
Brian, I had little, to give you somewhere to go with bigger. That. Had to give you somewhere to go with that.
Okay. Dude, okay, so the story, because I read this first thing this morning because it's Weird Things Day. Guy wakes up to the sound of crunch, crunch, grind, and feeling his body move. A brown bear has his maw over this teenager's head, dragging him out. He starts screaming and flailing. Rest of everyone wakes up and apparently makes enough of a ruckus to distract him, and they eventually chase off the brown bear. He was treated for substantial injuries, I guess. I don't know.
Non-life-threatening injuries.
Non-life-threatening injuries.
So let's read the killer quote here. This is from David Garcelles, a wildlife research scientist with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. It sounds like a predatory attack. I assume the bear was intent on killing and eating that guy. He went on to explain that bears are typically weird people, and it's likely the bear was trying to drag Dylan away from the other campers so it could more easily prey on him.
I mean, that would kind of make sense from the bear's perspective. It's like if you come across a bunch of sleeping anythings, and you're like, well, the one thing I don't want to do is just dig in and then have to deal with everyone waking up. Let me just grab this one by the most convenient mouth plate on his body, drag away, and then you start screaming and everything's screwed up, and then you have to go home to your bear wife and explain why you came home empty-handed again, and that old nag won't leave you alone about how if you would just bother to forage like the rest of the other bears, this wouldn't be a problem.
That bear she dated in college.
Oh, jeez.
His Mustang. And
again,
like,
with this one. I told you, that's a Kodiak. Totally different breed. You married me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I can only grab teenagers halfway out of a campsite.
So, like, that bear has to be intensely hungry to do something like that, right? Because that's very out of context for a bear like that to go into that kind of a dwelling and drag off a human teenager.
So it's, you know, my new book coming out this October, The Naturalist, which features, you know, the focal point is bear attacks or perceived bear attack. Had to do a lot of research into this, and you find out how exceedingly rare they were. But there has been this recent uptick, and, you know, it's human populations have been doubling. And also we're doing more too. It's not just, and people are like, you know, we're more people. True. Yes, there are more people. We're also protecting more species and restricting the hunting of certain things that were hunted back. Not to say that we should be killing off all these bears at all. I'm not saying that at all. But there had been, you know, we've had humans in these areas for hundreds of years, and you've had some people that proactively sought them out to eat them because that was a major food source.
I got a quick question for you, and I'm betting you know. I know two things are happening. On one hand, you know, populations are exploding, but on the other hand, humans are racing into the cities, you know, to depopulate farms and all this stuff. Which is happening at the faster race? Like, in that regard, are there fewer peoples per capita in the unpopulated areas than there were in the 1800s or so?
I would imagine there's more people than there were in the 1800s because there's so many more people now. But what happens is you take certain places but people might be, you know, in like take a place like Colorado or other places like this is, you know, Colorado has an increasing population. I don't know. This was Minnesota. I assume that Minnesota is probably one of the places remain static or have declining. But when it comes to people going camping or going outdoor, there might be an increased density. But it's a very good point. Is it like, you know, some of these places where they've been happening, it's, you know, it's places where it's not, you know, it's not the same as saying, oh, there are more people. Like, there's not, are there more people in that area? Or is it because we're cutting back on, not to say that, you know, there would have been more encounters had we been hunting them back. Not to say that, and again, I'm not making a claim that therefore we should go hunt them. more, you know. But I'm just saying that there was this other limiting factor. You know, that was a, you know, I get into discussions with friends and they talk about like bringing back animals or areas and stuff and, you know, repopulating. I'm like, you know, the one thing is you probably need to allow hunting to some degree because there's always been hunting in many of these areas for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So unless you're trying to go to like a pre, you know, man environment.
I wonder what the future of that is. Like if we evolve to a point where we, you know, meat becomes less of a thing. You can make that on your 3D printer or whatever. Like what the future of just incapacitating animals is. Like whether or not it's just at some point we come to an understanding that it's like, yeah, we should just always carry these laser tranks.
Right. What? And also you have on top of that the very real right now concern about there's Radiolab did a really fascinating program on it. The idea of if you're under attack by a large animal, there's a good chance that it is a stud past its prime, a bull looking, you know, getting overly aggressive, going out to just kind of tear stuff up. With the biological consequence of it being, hey man, you're out of the gene pool, why don't you go crazy and tear stuff up? And in which case you're morally justified as an environmentalist of fulfilling this creature's destiny.
It's a weird, you know, it's an open question. There's a book out that I have not read, but Matt Ridley did a review of at The Rational Optimist. And the book is The Inheritors of the Earth. And the caption is how nature is thriving in an age of extinction. And the premise of the book talks about how human beings are affecting, you know, biodiversity and how there actually seems to be an increase in speciation. And it's a very counterintuitive sort of premise, you know. But the idea is that talks about how there are, you know, many, many more species there were now, while we're sort of assuming that we're going through this period of like, oh, this. Some people want to say that we're going through this big, huge de-extinction or this extinction event or whatever, but he makes the argument that this is basically a sixth genesis right now because you have, as we've been changing the environment, animals have been adapting tremendously. And you see that in examples of things that you never even think about, like sparrows, right? Sparrows, we like sparrows. Well, sparrows were in one small, tiny part of the world, and they spread around the world with people. You go into urban environments, and this is an example I use, is you have raccoons, which are a forest animal, but they've adapted extremely well to urban environments to the point that often you forget how many of them there are around them, you know, around you at any given point. And, you know, so it's a very, you know, not to say it won't be a controversial point, but he's an ecologist, an evolutionary biologist. You know, it produced a very, very, you know, apparently oppressive, you know, work explaining like, hey, you know, not to say that, you know, things aren't threatened because things are. But the other side of it is that because of this chaos, things flourish.
That's interesting. So if your goal is biodiversity, the intuitive thing is don't wipe out a niche of that's already occupied because that would reduce biodiversity. But let's say in two alternate realities – in one world, you wiped out the niche completely and you allowed all competitors to come in and start from the ground up to fill that niche. And in another reality, you made human-initiated efforts to make sure that there was like a bare minimum standard or it was just good enough to keep them there or whatever. I don't know.
You know, there is this – it's – you know, they give an example. It says more new plant species have come into hybrid existence in Britain in the last 300 years than are listed as having died out in whole of Europe. And it says if you're sniffy about, you know, Ridley points out, if you're sniffy about hybrids, remember you probably are one. You know, all people with any non-African ancestry have genes from Neanderthals or Denisovians. So, you know, the argument of the book is that humans must adapt and help direct change rather than attempt to preserve the world in aspic. So, you know, the idea is that we need to, you know, not try to preserve and, you know, snapshot something, freeze it in time. And that's been one of the problems we've dealt with environmentalism, people's concept of history, too, is that we have this idea of this is what it was, yes, right before they put a house there. But that's not what it was 50 years before or 80 years or 100 years before. And there are many different forms of nature to exist. And there's some animals been here for a while, some animals have not. It's just a very, you know, it's a complex issue. There's no simple, easy answer.
Yeah, I think that is a fascinating idea is when is the right time to preserve, right?
We can't,
Yeah, I think there's always going to be an inherent narcissism to making a decision that, like, no, even if the idea is, no, this is when nature gets to be allowed to take its own course. But it's like, not really, because we exist, right? Like, you know.
Well, yeah, and the problem is that, think about it this way, is that if you try to freeze it, we try to snapshot, we try to maintain an environment as it was, we thought it should be, is it's like you're decreasing your ability to adapt to any sort of changes in environment, changes in, you know, weather, et cetera. And it's like you're keeping your genes the same, you're not bringing in the variation, and then you become more vulnerable. You make a vulnerable, you know, if you treat, you know, a forest one particular way, which may have been good for a certain kind of climb, but after a period of time, you know, maybe the heat temperatures go up or it gets drier period, whatever, it's more prone to forest fire and it's less likely to be able to rebound. You know, you need that variability.
Sure, that's the argument. I'm gonna use this phrase. I swear it's unironically. The argument against old growth forests is that they tend to be drier. They tend to have cleared out everything underneath. So when they do burn, as many forests do in a natural way, they are totally sterilized because you don't have all of that that fertile stuff that makes it easy to regrow.
Yeah. Yeah, so speaking of the growth of the species, this was a story I teased last episode. And this is, and there's the story of humanity's spread is fascinating because we fall into this sort of idea of we have a particular event, we have something we look at, we go, okay, we know this, we have pretty good, you know, we found these bones here. We have very good data about when this comes from. You know, there's 100 different forms of radiocarbon. We can put this here specifically. We put a peg on the map and say, or the timeline, and say, this is here. This is the strongest evidence here. Before that, not so likely. We think we have a really good point. We like absolutes. We love absolutes both in physics. We love it in history. We love it in anthropology. We love it in genetics. We love these things. But you have to increasingly learn. You have to embrace the idea that, you know, science is tentative. Science is provisional. Science is, we think this is likely to be true. And an example in history and anthropology was like what was Clovis. Clovis was the oldest site of human habitation in Americas, you know, that we thought like this is the point where we hold a site. Now, we knew people were there a little before, but we didn't think a lot before. I think it was like New Mexico, right? And if you had any site that you claimed was pre-Clovis, it was a bit controversial. It was pretty controversial. Part of it was because Clovis was very well established, but otherwise, but it was also, it's like, you know, it made sense towards our migration map, like when people came through, like, yeah, this seems to be at the right point at which they would have got to here and whatnot. So pre-Clovis sites were very suspicious, but we've pushed those back by thousands of years now. We found other sites even earlier. And now we're getting into this very interesting genetic age where when we start looking at the DNA of what's going on, we're getting some very curious sorts of things. And we talked about this before, and there's some more evidence of this, of that there was a story about, you know, people found, I think out here in California, a site where they think that they found evidence of like this was a gosh, like a 20,000 year old site that they thought humans were here, which is like more than 10,000 years before humans were going to come to here, you know, to the Americas, which was super controversial, super, super controversial. And the evidence isn't enough to say this is like this is true. It's worth saying this is curious. And now we have, in looking at Neanderthal DNA, while fossils DNA scientists are piecing together a picture of humanity's beginnings, an origin story with more twists than anything you would find at the movie theater has emerged. The expert consensus now is that Homo sapiens evolved at least 300,000 years ago in Africa. Only much later, roughly 70,000 years ago, did a small group of Africans establish themselves on other continents, giving rise to other populations of people today. To Johannes Kraus, the director of the Max Planck Institute for Human History in Germany, that gap seems peculiar. Why do people not leave Africa before, he asked in an interview. After all, he observed, the continent is physically linked to the Near East. This is, by the way, from New York Times. And part of the answer to that question had been is we thought that we were sort of trapped because of like climate, like between these very, very dry and hospitable spots. But that can vary. And so now, you know, it's been a struggle for a long time to try to understand this. And the oldest bones are Neanderthal, like individuals were found in caves in Spain over about 400,000 years ago. But now, here's when we get to the point here. They're looking at the DNA of, they've been looking at some genetic material of Neanderthals, and they're finding genes that look like they're Homo sapiens. they're looking at what they think would have been, you know, would have been further back than when humans have been established for having gone to Europe or the Middle East and intermingled with Neanderthals. And so now they're finding, they're pushing this back, that they're looking into examples. So you had about 450,000 years ago, there was a common ancestor that split into humans. One led to Neanderthals and the Denisovians. And the Denisovians are sort of very, very new. They're one we're just learning a lot about, but they're, you know, contemporaneous to Neanderthals. So anyhow, they've been looking at the DNA mystery, but in the realization is that they think that there may have been like a much later period. And so he says, he and his colleagues determined that all known Neanderthals inherited their mitochondrial DNA from an ancestor who lived 270,000 years ago. But he goes on to point out that trying to find this the point here. Oh, so yeah, now they talk about looking at finding hybrids and stuff, and they're finding examples of what look like, you know, pre when humans are supposed to have left.
So you're saying that just all of the estimation methods previously had just picked the wrong number, or is this like some other vector by which they made it to the same spot?
You know, it's the point at which, no, it's not that they're wrong. It's just that you have evidence to say that we found a point here where we found that, you know, that we find humans, you know, we find, you know, Neanderthal DNA in our bodies, right, in us, and we can sort of spot these points at which that sort of came out.
Sure.
Now what they're doing is that they've been looking at Neanderthal DNA and finding evidence of human DNA, and some of these sort of things appear to have come from way before.
I think that's the, you know, just the understanding of exactly how biodiverse, like any humanoid kind of species was, is just always so interesting to me.
So out of nowhere, can I bring up the fact that, like, when I was a kid in school, I was taught that speciation, one species being different from another species, was completely defined. It was defined. There was one definition. Two different species can't make a baby together. And then I got a little bit older and I find out about stuff like donkeys, right? You know, it's like, well, it's half mule, half horse or whatever. And they're like, but don't worry, it's cool because their offspring is sterile. So even though they're producing another one, the one they produce does it. And then you start hearing these edge cases of like, okay, maybe they're not sterile. Maybe gender is a spectrum. Maybe everything, you know, I mean, it's like, It is shocking to me how simple and black and white everything was taught to me 30 years ago and how wrong all of it seems to be nowadays.
I mean, isn't that like the whole of human knowledge? Like, not to get too meta, but like there's kind of a guiding philosophy in my life. And part of it is to excuse laziness. But the other side is just like, isn't everybody, with the exception of like the transcendent thinkers of our age, like, isn't what is thought to be like well-read common wisdom kind of always just laughably poop in like 50 years?
And what's funny is I think I'm dovetailing into this nicely, but the first hints that everything I knew was wrong came to me 20 years ago when I was in college, and the idea of fuzzy logic first got introduced to me. The idea that it's like, hey, define a table, and then you picture a table, and you're like, okay, well.
Yeah. Now imagine Jesus inventing the table as he did.
That's a specific cultural reference. But beyond that, like, if you, at what point does a table become more chair-like? At what point does a table become more end table-like or coffee table-like? Or at what point does a table become a tower, just a full-on tower? You would never call it a table.
So to that's why this all of a sudden, if you're trying to scan this thing, it gets really confusing. So what is it? So the story we know or we accept right now is we had you know, the offshoot leaves Africa, spreads out. It's, you know, proto Neanderthals becomes Neanderthals and Denisovians. They split, right? And you get Denisovians kind of way off in, you know, sort of parts of Asia, whatever. If you have Asian ancestry, there's a high chance that you have Denisovian ancestry. Neanderthals go to Middle East and Northern Europe. And that split happened something like about 400,000 years ago or so is when they roughly when that sort of split happened. And then we can look at the DNA and identify the differences, and we can find humans that later came from, you know, as they humans left Africa, and the prevailing thought was humans left Africa about 70,000 years ago. The problem is that they were looking at some of this DNA is, you know, several hundred thousand years old. It, you know, like, they're looking at this saying, wait, this is this kind of looks Neanderthal-like, or this kind of looks Denisovian, so we maybe have an idea where the split, so this could have been a hybrid, but then they find evidence of human DNA in there. And you'll see, so you have three, we'll call three people, they're all humans, but we'll say homo, we'll say humans, Neanderthals, Denisovian. And evidence, it puts a date, and this is finding stuff of, you know, this is some points, like they're looking at, trying to give you an example where some of the places they're finding stuff from, but they're finding in far reaches that we thought were Neanderthal only or Denisovian only, that they think it may have been 270,000 years ago, African humans closely related to a group very much like us, but not Neanderthal, not Denisovian, moved into Europe and interbred with Neanderthals, and their DNA entered the gene pool there.
Okay, this is interesting. Picture this. This is all making me think that an awful lot of assumptions that have been made up until now might have to do with just a poor data set. So let's say the world gets flash frozen and a nuclear bomb goes off, and somewhere dog people land, and all they care about is dog-looking skeletons. And let's say they only get three dog-looking skeletons in the entire planet. One a Chihuahua, one a Great Dane, one I don't know, the other type. There's only three types of dogs.
And Peggy.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So it's like it could be understood why they would say, well, there were three different types of dogs and they never interbred, because we don't see any way that all these things go, they're clearly different species. And then yet at a genetic level, all of these breeds are straight up the same species, right?
Yeah, it comes down to, for us, it's understanding when we fall in love with sort of the linear line. The line splits here, the line splits here, and we kind of forget the lines come back and reemerge, and that makes things complicated. We like the idea that this, it's the classic cladogram. You know, this is this, this is this, this is this. Like, it gets very fuzzy, and sometimes things, the morphology looks very similar. The bones and all that look very similar, but there's a lot going on internally that you don't see, that we don't know. And we have to sort of get out of that mindset, and we like to, this is a thing, this is a thing, this is a thing. Everything's a hybrid. Everything's a hybrid of something. And everything is a mutant. So what happened is we had this sort of narrative that we loved, and we loved, you know, even science, we love dogmas, we love dogmatic. This is the way it was, is, hey, you know, we have these pre-ancestors, you know, they split off, some left Africa early on, became Neanderthals. Then 70,000 years ago, we left, and then we joined in Europe and got along really well and saved some of the genes, but the Neanderthals died out. Like, okay, great story. Like, okay, well, you know, what about this other weird DNA over there? Like, okay, now we have enough evidence. Okay, there's another group called Denisovians. Okay, got it. Well, now we're finding some other DNA that seems more closely related to human DNA, the Denisovian or Neanderthal DNA that's in their DNA. Now it's like, but we thought they only went 70,000 years ago, and now this pushes it back. And they found human-like fossils in a cave, and this was in, in Morocco. This is just real recent, last month. So a Moroccan cave with 300,000-year-old fossils, and this was a region that we did not think humans were there. You know, we thought it was 230,000 years later, a quarter million years later, you know, that they came. So a quarter million years before we even thought they were in that region, we're now finding human fossils, human-like fossils there.
Man, if the headline is humans, colon, not as smart as we think we are, then you'll get no disagreement on this
well,
end.
Well, but it's no, I think the fascinating part is that I bring up, like, I had a story I wrote, which was the idea of, like, what if you had a human migration 120,000 years ago, when we had what was called the Eemian period, which was warmer than it was today. It was another period. It was an interglacial period, and the ice caps would have been retreated. You would have had a lot of, you know, great land places to live like that. And it's entirely feasible you could have had Mayan level, Roman level civilizations could have emerged in that 10-15,000 year period there. That you had during the Eemian period. And then as the ice age as the interglacial period ended and it came back, you know, that would have ended up being under ice for 100,000 years.
Imagine that as like time travel tourism, that you're like, oh, like, sure, you can go to a really nice beach resort now, but like, we have an amazing vacation getaway for you, like in what is now the English Channel or whatever, or you know, in some like in Doggerland or something. Yeah. Like, ah, like imagine your summer home in this like now not non-existent part due to fluctuation of where water and stuff mm-hmm. is.
That's like, yeah, they do like, it's kind of a classic sci-fi premise. You go to Pompeii right before Pompeii explodes, or you go there because it won't leave any evidence that you're there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, well, except for that one dude who got caught cranking it.
Yeah. But there, for the grace of Zeus, go I.
Did you not see that, Brian?
Nope.
All right. Well, we don't need to get into
oh,
it.
Oh, wait, but you're talking about the Pompeii thing.
Yeah.
How believable is that?
I mean, I don't know.
I will put it this way. If I knew I only had seconds to live.
It just seems, it's too perfect. Like, it's too perfect. It makes me believe, like, I don't know how
much.
There's
got to be one guy in Pompeii.
I believe it. Okay, but what are the odds that that one guy also happened to get flash frozen, also perfectly preserved him, and it survived through the ages, and that happened to be the one that some artist cleaned up? I mean, look, I mean. You get some ash. That, you clean it up. You can make it look like a lot of different stuff. We all see what we want to see.
That was not a lazy performance. Like that dude is like Eddie Van Halen, like on his back, just you know, working the frets.
I mean, I think that's why I don't believe it.
Okay.
Because it just seems like I'd be huddled. Never mind.
Oh no.
Anyhow,
yeah.
So. Yeah.
All right. We don't have to go any further into it. Yeah, Do your own homework, kids.
I totally forgot my other point, but I guess it's irrelevant.
Sorry about
that. Just, one quick point was like Doggerland's a thing we talk about, but I guarantee you we ask 100 people, 95 out of 100 are going to have 99 out of 100 will have no idea what Doggerland is. And, you know, the idea that there was this very big point of history where England and France were connected by land. That was within, you know, a scale that we can kind of understand, but it's, you know, one of these things, it's just, it doesn't fit into, I love it when I look at a historical map, it's like, oh, this is like, you know, Roman civilization, you know, circa, you know, 500 or the Greeks or whatever. And you're like, that landscape is not what a coastline is not what that looked like. You know, that's so different. And we have topological maps that can tell us what it's like. And we start trying to place these things, these maps that have changed. And it's not the case. So, anyhow,
yeah. And just in case somebody didn't hear yet, Doggerland was the connective landmass between England and France, and yeah. I think I don't know. It's one of those things where you know, even now, you know, you look at like travel magazines and stuff, and you're like, oh well, you know, the counterintuitive thought is that like all these places that are really cold during the winter are really beautiful during the summer, and it's like. That'd be great. Just find like the 10 best vacation destinations throughout the economic ups and downs of our earth. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm all for it. And history is cool because it's full of surprises. You know, it's also full of surprises, the Weird Things podcast.
Oh, my gosh. If only there was some way that you were able to help keep the Weird Things podcast coming. Loud, live, and hey, independent.
Surprise, listeners, give us money at patreon.com/weirdthings. Not only do you get the our After Things podcast and you get your own RSS feed, which I have to say, the work that Patreon has done on their RSS feeds is really exemplary. And you see it with, you know, what sound the issues that SoundCloud is having now, and they're like cutting back.
I actually don't know the issues on SoundCloud. What is this gossip story?
Well, it's not a gossip. Anybody, if you were an employee of SoundCloud in anywhere but I think like London and Germany or New York and Germany, you no longer have a job. They cut a huge part of their workforce. I think they were hoping to get acquired at a certain point or raise like an emergency round of funding. I think they wound up getting credit just to stay afloat, and that cushion is now gone. So if you depend on SoundCloud, and I think a lot of podcasters do, or listeners do, and I know I use it, it's something that you want to keep an eye on. But meanwhile, Patreon's really, really, really figured out a lot of tools that I would have loved on a service like SoundCloud, and now to be able to work it into a platform where people can support it. And, you know, I know for other Patreons, you can have stuff at certain levels where people can get it. It's just great. You know, it's something that you would have assumed people would have built into a platform like this before now, but thank God Patreon did it. And you can reap the benefits by getting your own Patreon RSS feed in your RSS feed reader if you go to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Well, you have to do more than just go there. I mean,
but you got to donate. You got to give us a couple.
Although maybe that's maybe that's how we take down Patreon, is we replace it with a new service where just the fact of you showing up makes us money.
We tear down the thing that is paying.
Yeah, but I mean, just imagine a better thing,
Invent money.
It's a new service called BlinkTwiceAndWe'llGetPaid.org, and then all you have to do to get us paid is blink twice. We're working on it. It's not there yet, okay. But
we're taking.
I mean, yeah, as long as we're waiting on it, you might as well, in the meantime, go to patreon.com/weirdthing.
So here's what you do. Yeah, you just go to Brian's email and send him your bank account number and your routing number, and he will make sure he only takes money when you blink.
Pretty sure, give or take.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You're going to get a little hair in the sausage.
Do you know what time it is? Anybody know what time it is?
Oh, please tell me it's the time that I think it is, because I think it's 2:26 p.m. Central Time.
Exactly.
Oh. Well, that was anticlimactic.
Well, Brian, maybe you're going to wish for some anticlimax when you find out what's in store for you. And we're not even going to get into what's in store for Justin, because we're going to have to wait a little while longer to find out. But, man, this could be the last days of Journey Quest if these guys don't survive. And
that's Journey Quest!
I'm just telling you, I don't know if they're going to make it.
Let's find out what happened last time on Journey Quest.
Previously on
Journey Quest!
Rules of Ugg are pretty simple, gentlemen. You have to survive.
I'm not playing these games. Either we die together or we both get out of here.
You're damn right. The worst part, he suffocated on this stump.
You run out into the field and you freeze. Yeah, so, previously on Journey Quest, Brian was about to embark upon the Game of Ugg with his fellow teammates. They'd heard how he had murdered his friend in some sort of a hazing ritual that was actually a joke where nobody's actually supposed to get murdered. So now they know Brian is totally legit hardcore, and he is the leader of the Ugg team as they embark upon the field to play Ugg.
That's right, man. What was the what was their name for me? Something Fist?
Hey, something Fist, you're the man. I'm gonna be, since I'm not a part of this episode of Journey Quest, I'm just gonna be random extras.
Oh, I actually, if I remember correctly, it was set up that we were gonna hear your side of the adventure right now.
Yes, we are, until he decided to rewrite, because meanwhile, Justin, who had daring attempt to escape, had crawled, or a cowardly attempt to escape, more like it, had crawled through a little tunnel because they decided the plan was, I guess, to pretend that one was alive and one wasn't, but not have a body. They didn't really think it through. So Justin crawls through this conduit tunnel, emerges through a little vent, climbs out, and hears this shut behind him. He hears the vent shut behind him. He turns around. The vent is now shut. He can't open it. And he's in the jungle, humid jungle. Things are cooling, calling, all sorts of strange noises, and it's starting to get darker, too. There's nothing a little more disturbing than a jungle at night with all the night sounds and all the fog and all the mist. What's your first impulse, Justin?
So my plan with Brian was to meet him on the outskirts of town. So what I want to do is find an exit point for the den, so I can wait for my friend Brian, who's definitely going to meet me, as was our plan.
So you look behind you and you realize this vent came out of the bottom of a sheer cliff. This cliff goes up like 300 feet. It's like as if the town or the city was built in some giant caldera and you're on the outside of it.
So I'm screwed.
Maybe.
I'm looking around to see if there's any way to get back up to the elevation that I was at.
it gets to be, the jungle gets to be too thick, but you find a little path and you see some footprints, some human footprints on the path leading away.
How many pairs of footprints? And did it appear to be carrying another body at the time?
One pair of foots and approximately $3 and change in their pockets.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to follow the footprints because hopefully that's going to get me back to the town.
Follow the footprints. They're taking you through the jungle and they're taking you away. And now you're winding over little hills and over climbs and over logs and over streams, and you hear things around you, things are moving in the brush surrounding you, you know, and it's getting a little bit darker. And you come to some area filled with a lot of these sort of grayish sort of rocks, right? And you get the sense that you're being followed by something kind of heavy moving along.
I'm going to scan around for anything I can use as a weapon. Is there anything I can use as a weapon around, like branches or?
You find a very nice, almost spear-like stick.
All right, I pick up my spear-like stick and I just I start muttering loudly enough that somebody could be able to hear me. I'm like, man, I bet you somebody tried to F with me. I would give them a real spearing right in the eye. They called me Eye Poker back when I was in high school because I used to spear people in the eye. That's how we got things done back where I'm from.
Well, you see a lot of movement in some bushes off to the left.
You know, thing I hated the most was log movers. That's who I really hate. They never screw out with me.
A voice yells out, yo, bro, easy with the spear. Easy.
I respond back, hopefully communicating in their native language. Whoa, I'm walking here.
I don't understand you, man, but listen, let's easy with the spear, Spearsy McSpearsy, okay?
Well, what? I don't know. Well, who are you? Watch it. You better cough up some answers real quick before you get the business end of this stick.
Dude, I'm just a bro out here helping you out, okay? That's all.
What's your name?
My Steve.
Steve?
Steve.
Steve, where are you from? Where are you from? What's going on? Answer quick. I got a spear.
I'm from around, all right? Listen, I want to help you. There's a lot of scary things out here in this jungle.
All right.
You need a friend.
Well, how did you get down here? Where do you live?
I live out here.
In the jungle?
In the jungle. I know how to survive.
By yourself?
By myself. I have some friends, mainly, sometimes. But mainly by myself.
Did you used to live in the town?
Oh, no, I don't go near there. Those people are weird.
Have you ever been to the town?
I've looked at it from afar, but I've never been in the town.
You ever played UGG?
I've heard the noises of this thing, and I've heard people talk about UGG, but I've never played UGG.
You don't know what it is?
No, not my thing.
Well, then know I'm the best at it. And if you ever cross me, Steve, I'm going to UGG you something fierce.
All right, bro. All right. Easy. Okay. So, listen, I got a little place over here. You want to go hang out? I'll go show it to you.
You got food?
I got food. I got magazines. I got, whatever. Got everything. You know, it's great. It's awesome. You're going to love it.
All right. I go with Steve.
Now, you haven't seen Steve yet. That's the thing. Steve is still hiding in the bushes.
Oh, okay. Steve, rise yourself up to show me who you are.
Well, I am standing, but you need to know something about me first before I step out from the bushes.
All right. What's that?
Well, this place you're in is a little bit different. The rules of genetics, you know, ever since the big event, things played out a little bit differently, and I don't want you to be frightened.
All right.
You'll probably think it's really cool. You're going to probably think it's really cool. You think it's probably really cool.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Lay it on me, Steve.
Bushes start to part. And meanwhile, Brian, no, I'm kidding. Bushes start to part. And you see a furry face hunched over shoulders. It's a giant sloth.
What? A talking giant sloth?
I thought for sure it was going to be the chimpanzee, man.
No. Don't be ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Wait, Steve. This is the coolest thing ever. Wait a minute. So you said the big event. What was the big event?
Well, it was what started all of this. You know, it's what caused all these sort of things to happen.
And what was that?
I don't know, man. I'm not into history. Let's go back to my cave and hang out, all right?
All right. Wait a minute.
Let's come on. It's just this way. Steve follows ahead, goes down the path. It's like, this was really cool. Well, you like video games? What do you like?
I'm starting to remember that there was a certain...
Come on, let's go. Let's hear it. It's starting to get dark. You don't want to be stuck out here. Let's get stuck. It's over here. It leads you down a path.
You want to know what, Steve? I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna hit the road. Actually, I appreciate it. You seem like a real cool guy.
What do you like? Like beer? I got beer. I got everything. Come on.
Yeah,
it's cool.
I'm just kind of a loner, being such a badass. I'm gonna just go
a little bit closer.
I begin to point my spear toward his eye.
I'm a herbivore. What are you worried about?
I heard tale.
The people over there in the village. What did they say?
There's a lot of disease out here, and I should stay away from other animals.
I'm clean, man. I'm clean.
Yeah, you know, all things being equal, I've come from a long way away. I should probably just stay away.
It's gonna get dark soon, man. You don't want to be in the jungle when it's dark. You do not want to be in the jungle when it's dark.
I'm gonna take my chances being out here.
Just get in the cave, man. Just get in the cave.
I now take a very aggressive two hand on my spear stance against Steve, and I say, Steve, bro, calm down.
Steve breaks down and starts to cry. I just wanted to be friends. That's all. I just wanted to be friends.
Can't we just go
somewhere and talk about this?
Don't be such a P-word, Steve. Fuck up.
We just want to be friends. Let's go get a beer and just talk it over, man. You know, like, you know, people say things about me and, you know, the rumors, they're just not true.
What do they say about you, Steve?
I don't know. It's, you know, just the things they said.
You can trust in me, Steve. Just go ahead and let me know what everybody says about you.
Just stuff that's said. Just things get said. Not everything gets said is true.
You can say it. You're in a safe space now, Steve. That you're
I could use a hug right now.
I would prefer you say it out loud before I come in.
I don't want to talk about this right now.
That you're raised.
I don't know what you're saying, and that's just not right. And you say that out loud, I'm going to get an attorney.
Ray of sunshine? Is that what? I mean, I don't know why you'd be ashamed of being a ray of sunshine.
It's what people call your name, man. Anyhow, all right, fine. Fine, I'm going to just go back and I'm going to just drink the beer by myself and hang out by myself. It's fine.
All right. Hey, which way to civilization?
Find it yourself. So Steve turns around and starts to walk away, kind of looks over his shoulder. Really good beer. It's really cool. It's really cool beer. Could have had fun. Could have had a lot of fun.
Oh, God. When I look out into the wilderness, is there any other sign of a clearing or food or anything?
No. Unless you want to eat just jungle.
Got a feeling that the game master wishes me to follow Steve. I say, Steve, all right. Listen, I'm going to put all the cards on the table. I don't know what the issue is. All I know is that I was told that in the wilderness, there are rapist sloths.
What? We're not even the same species, bro. Oh, that's just,
So who said this? Thing. Who said this?
Who knows? It's another guy I met. I didn't know him very well. So here's the deal. I am going to follow you, and I'm going to get food, and then I'm going to leave. We can hang out, but if you make an aggressive move toward me, I will kill you.
Oh my God,
dude, bro, I'm a sloth. What's aggressive for me? I move like 2 miles an hour. It's all cool.
All right, so I begin to walk towards Steve's lair.
All right, you walk towards. Like, now, dude, you gotta understand. We gotta go up over some. It's gonna get kind of a. We gotta go over some tree stems and things like that. And you're not a good climber, so just get on my back.
You want to know what? I'm actually a better climber than you might think. So I'm gonna go ahead and just climb by myself.
Just get on my back. It'll be easier. It's a special way. You might get lost, but just climb on my back.
Steve, on my back. Immediately upon trusting you, you are rewarding me with nothing but very uncomfortable decisions I have to make, and I don't appreciate it. How about I try to climb by myself? If I can't do it, then I'll let you help.
Fine. Just trying to help out, man. And so he takes you. You go through some trees that are like very, very sheer and very hard to climb. Big trunks. He puts his claws in, starts to climb up. You try to shimmy. You can't even climb up. So like looks
all
down.
Right,
and you're like, bro,
Steve.
How you doing, bro? It's fine. It's fine. You're good. You got this.
I try to. All right, Steve. Come on back.
Back.
You're right. Let me get on your back.
Be. All right, to be on the back. He whispers.
Oh, God damn it.
Start climbing. He's holding on to his fur. He keeps looking back at you. You're going to like the hideout, man. It's really, really awesome. It's great. It's really, really fun. It's going to be a great time. And he's giggling to himself as he climbs higher through the tree.
I continue to not make eye contact. I'm looking away, and I'm just commenting on other things. Like, man, these trees, right? Man, crazy trunks on these trees.
Trunks. Yeah, big strong trunks.
You know. Man, look how separate they are. These separate trees, not near each other.
You reach a little plateau. You're still on his back. Walking along, like we're almost there, man. It's gonna be a great time. It's gonna be great. It's just us hanging out. And you hear another voice go, whisper, "Don't go. Don't go there." It's just small enough, like Steve doesn't even hear it. You're walking along, and you hear from the jungle again, "Don't go. Don't go there." All right, dude, we're almost there.
I ask Steve. Steve, do you hear that?
Whoa, was somebody saying something? Steve turns around and looks in the forest. A lot of liars.
I hop
here.
Off Steve's back, and I say, Steve, I have now begun your trial. And I rap my stick on the ground 3 times, and I say, Oye, 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 the forest gods have sent me here for the trial of Steve. Isn't that right, woodland friends?
Nothing but quiet.
But I act like I'm hearing them, and I say, yes, yes, fill me with your power. Steve, are you ready for your trial?
Dude, you're making crazy talk. You really... just need to settle down and chill out. And...
The first trial is here. It is the trial of a requirement. What you have to do is walk to your domicile and get me food. I will stay here and wait for your trial to finish.
Hey, man, not for nothing, but the trial of requirement is the most challenging and important of all the trials, Steve. I mean, if you hear me, I'm just thinking this. I'm off playing a game of Ugg right now.
Listen, guys. Listen, weird in my head. Justin, all I'm trying to say is, what's your name, right? I just, you know, so you look like a Justin. You could be a Justin,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no,
right?
I'm Justin, yeah.
I'm just saying that you don't want to be out here. And I just think that it's best if you just, you know, come hang out with me. And, you know, I think sometimes you might hear some other voices in the jungle telling you things. And I think that you need to just listen to me because I know the jungle. I'm safe. And anything else that tells you there that you know, that you need to do something differently is just liar. It's a lot of liars. There's a lot of lying liars. A lot of lying liars out here in this jungle.
We will table the challenge of requirement for the second challenge, the challenge of knowledge.
Say challenge. It's me, your favorite spider. Can I help you with anything? My long tendrilled tentacles walk closely to you, my friend. Don't mind my fangs. They never molest you.
Oh, no. Steve, do you know this guy?
Yeah. I know.
What did Steve say about me? I'm just a friendly spider. Spider, comma, man. I'm just a friendly neighborhood spider.
It's bad news, man. It's bad news.
Is this more of his internet lies? Steve's on Reddit, you know. You should look at his history. Gone wild. Shut up, man.
That's just, they make stuff up there, okay? They make stuff up about anything, okay?
And so, Steve and Spider, comma man, we begin with our third and most important trial.
Oh, yes.
The trial of murdering each other.
Oh, yes.
And go.
That's a great trial. Allow me to untense your shoulders. You're so tense.
No, let me put 1, 2, 3, 4. Now's the time for murder.
5, 6 of my.
Climb onto my back, man. I'll take you away.
8.
Climb onto my back.
I start rubbing your shoulders. Your shoulders.
I brandish my spear at the spider.
Allow me to remind you that my venom is quite relaxing. Many people say that it unclinches. Is that which click clacks?
Okay, so I hop on. All right, Steve, let's get the hell out of here. We're out of here. Bye, bye, Spider.
What?
You passed all the tests, Steve. The forest creatures
scurries away at sloth speed.
You're not leaving me behind, are you? I hope you're not leaving me behind.
That guy's weird. Let's keep going. You go through a little valley.
I hear the spider through the jungle. Screw you, tease.
Finally, we come to a crevasse. We go through there and then into a crevice and into a tiny little passage. It's just wide enough. Steve's like, you go first.
Oh, God, no. why don't you go first, Steve?
He's like, all right, bro, it's fine. So Steve crawls through the hole. It's like big in here. You hear his voice echo. It's totally cool in here, dude. Come on in.
I make sure that my spear is kind of with me and is leading me as much as possible as I squeeze through the hole.
Off in the distance, you hear, are you still there, Justin? Are you still tense?
So you climb through the hole. It's dark. Steve's like, let me shut the door so that weirdo doesn't get in here. And you hear the sound of a rock closing in front and all the lights on and it's totally dark.
Hey, Steve, where's the light switch here, huh?
Oh, I see plenty fine, bro. Real fine. Real, real fine.
Steve, I'm going to need a little light here.
Now it's quiet.
Oh, God damn it, Steve.
Next time on Journey Quest, the Battle of Ugg. And it may be the game of Ugg that gets talked about for the ages. It may be one of those events when Ugg takes place that Ugg is always exciting. Trust me, it's very exciting. But this particular game of Ugg may be one of the best ever. It's going to go down in the books.
I believe it.
Then later on, we'll find out what happened to Justin.
All right.
Walked right into the cave.
I didn't have a lot of choice. Like, there was literally, I tried everything to do to not go into Steve's rape cave, and yet there I am.
You didn't accept my relaxing massage. That was always an option.
There were two things. There were rape spiders and rape sloths, and like,
molesting spiders.
Yes, you can be consent. No, you can't have consent to be molested. Never mind. Let's not talk about that.
Hey, we got pics? Who's got pics?
All right, now we understand the Title X rules. I've had to rethink a lot of my opinions right now about,
How many of you guys love that movie Spider, Man?
Hey, that'll be my pick. I love Spider-Man Homecoming. Thought it was really, really good. I really like the script. If the rumors are true and Spider-Man plays a much larger role in the next phase of Marvel movies, then I will be very, very happy. I also think that it should be mandatory that Michael Keaton is in every movie. And
yeah. I'm tempted to hold off on discussing it too much because I suspect that we could just explore the movie.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Okay. No. Well, then let me just vaguely say, I think you could make a case. Good. Andrew's covering his ears. Real quick, Justin, like you could make a legit case that the Vulture is the single most interesting villain in all of the MCU.
As portrayed by Keaton.
Yeah.
And this can be Andrew. That's fine. We're not going to talk about the movie. We're fine. We're good.
We're doing our impression of the president. Everything's okay.
There are no spoilers in this zone.
I think just meta about the property and not the movie. There's a reason why I think. The idea of having access to Spider-Man is so important to Marvel, and not the least of which is that the villains are just kind of beyond the pale amazing and awesome. There's so much great stuff there, and I think, as was evidenced in this movie, that the direction that they wound up taking was something that in other hands could be very generic. And even where I thought they were going to go was kind of more one-off-y.
Sure.
This was extraordinarily well done.
Yeah, agreed. I, too, suggest Spider-Man Homecoming. And next up, our spider of choice, the webmaster himself, Andrew Main.
Thank you, Brighton. I'm so glad to be able to spend my little recommendation to you all.
All right, here, hold on. Pause. Brian, can you read the text that Andrew sent you? Because as soon as I tried to gum up the works, I saw Andrew furiously typing out a text. And I know if it's not going to me, it had to go to either you or Bryce. And considering you came in right on cue afterward.
Andrew Main only wrote the sentence, "Be the voice of the molesting spider." and at that point, the actual spirit of the molesting spider took over, and the rest was just as natural as can be.
The phrase, "my venom is very relaxing, it unclenches what is normally clenched," is just amazing.
Yeah, Bedweave says I went all method on it.
is that method? Okay.
Yeah, if that's method, then Bryce, please leave the studio. All right, Andrew, what's your pick?
So my pick is, man, I've been having so much fun with this. And that is, I mentioned to Brian before, and I think I briefly mentioned it, and that is, if you have an Alexa, you can open up a skill called, different skills. Somebody put on a bunch of skills that read old-time, or plays these, rather, old-time radio dramas and series. And one of them is the old series Dimension X, which used to have had science fiction by Robert Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, just a lot of greats, just a lot of really great classic science fiction stories told in like generally half hour full radio productions. And this is from 1950, these 1950 radio productions of these. And some of these stories, if you're into sci-fi, you've heard before, you're familiar with, some of them are different ones. And I've had a lot of, and granted, they're made in 1950, so there's sort of a 1950 sensibility about it, but I've enjoyed them. I really, really enjoy them. And that's been my favorite thing. So in Dimension X, it works as if you have an Alexa, you go in there and you say, I'm going to enable the skill. And once it's enabled, you would say, open Radio Dimension X. And then it will pick up the last episode you listened to. I had fun. And there is something like 40 or 50 episodes in Radio Dimension X. Then they did a follow-up series, which repeated some of it. Was a new one, which was X-1, which had like another 130 episodes. So if you like that collected works of Arthur C. Clarke, that big volume of audio that was, I thought, delightful, you're going to love this. And I mean, there's like, they do a production of Robert Heinlein's The Roads Must Roll, which is, you know, where it's like a story about the future where everybody moves on these moving sidewalks, and it's kind of got like, you know, union politics and stuff, and it opens up with a union meeting, and it sounds like you're there, like they're in a meeting hall talking about this while the roads are rolling in the background. And it's that kind of radio production where they just tried to create a cinema for the years.
That is awesome.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's great.
It's one of those things that I think, you know, this is, we're obviously having a moment right now for voice AI or voice assistants, you know, in our homes. And I think there's just such a second life for all the stuff that we are doing. And I can't wait until we have more of a totally interconnected experience. It's part of what I hope for the Apple HomePod is, you know, just something where I can seamlessly just start a thing and it starts playing, and I can take my earphones out and it's already playing and it's nice and it's cool. And I don't know. I'm excited for more. I think audio content, new and old, continues to sing as this becomes more of an audio only internet becomes a reality.
To touch back on like Radio Dimension X, one of the things that charms me is the idea that these were done in 1950. They're literally, if you listen to it, in the middle of one of the episodes, they announced the breakout of the Korean War.
Really?
Which, yeah, I mean, the masters were taken from wherever the rebroadcast, whatever. You listen to the outbreak, and then a couple of episodes later, you get updates on that and these Wheaties commercials, which are just kind of amazing. You know,
wow.
I'm your Wheaties brand. You know, like have it at 7. So you feel great at 11, but must get some Wheaties now. Anyhow, point is, you think about this, that's almost 70 years old, when these were made. And if you go back in 1950, that would be like, I'd say it'd be like listening to radio from 1880, but they didn't have it.
Yeah.
And you think about how far away we are, but it's still connected, you feel. And it's funny because you listen to it and like, you know, they talk about like they're in the future, like 2,000 years in the future, and like we'll call so and so, and you hear the sound of like a rotary phone being picked up. And
oh my god!
You know, they're in spaceships, they're going to flying planets, and like the captain gets like an intercom buzz and just it's 1950. It's 1950, which is 5 years after World War II ended. So it's kind of amazing, but how much the stories, I've had so much fun with them. They're so, and it's not because it's, you know, the production values can sometimes be a little campy, but they're fun. But I love the fact, as you're pointing out, we live in an age where it would have been hard 20 years ago for me. I'd have to track down, maybe somebody put these on CDs or whatever, but just by uttering words, radio dramas from 70 years ago now appear.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. So,
awesome.
Groovy, gentlemen. Really been weird.
More than usual.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.